Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. We come to you every day with a podcast and radio program that helps you improve your American English skills. We present interesting stories from around the world at a slow speed. Today we have two stories for you. First, we will travel to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to hear about agriculture and the search for peace. Then, some information about a food that many Americans love to eat, but something new has been added that may cause harm to young people. You are listening to the Voice of America. Let's get started with Part 1 and Mario Ritter.
Three times a week, a group of smallholder farmers work together in a community field in Kirolirwe, a village in eastern North Kivu province, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Recently, the group prepared the soil before planting potatoes. Let's go, shouted the team leader. They encouraged each other to work harder. Nearly 200,000 displaced persons fled to camps in the Democratic Republic of the Congo because of violence in the east. Most people there say land disputes are one of the root causes of the area's conflicts. So recently, large landowners have been asked to free up more of their land to individual farmers interested in cultivating crops. Is this a solution to the land problem? An organization called FOPAC is teaching this group better farming methods, like sowing improved seeds in straight-line furrows. It is also showing the farmers how to remove grass instead of burying it, and to use animal waste as fertilizer. Mumbere Makuke works for FOPAC as a farming advisor. He says the surrounding hills are owned by Olive Lembe, the wife of Joseph Kabila. Kabila is also the president of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Much of the land once was cultivated, but he says the person Olive Lembe bought the property from last year stopped planting crops. Now the land is mainly grassland. Lembe is now urging smallholders to grow crops on some of her land, which she has renamed Hope Farm. Many local people have trouble gaining use of the land. Ranchers bought much land in the area, often on dubious terms. Hope Farm requires farmers to make payments for use of the land, and payments have risen sharply in recent years. He says the usual rental payment in this area for 1 hectare is $200 for a season of 4 months. Many people rent smaller fields of about 400 square meters for $10 a season. FOPAC tries to avoid conflict with ranchers whose animals often eat farmers' crops. He says, we decided to dig ditches around the fields to stop cattle from getting across. Reporter Nick Long says the farmers he spoke with seemed happy with the new farming techniques. But there is little manure available for their own fields. Also, improved potato seeds cost $1,600 for the 2 tons needed to plant 1 hectare. That is a lot of money for many farmers, Josephat Munsana, is an agricultural researcher. He says many farmers are not wealthy enough to pay rent, let alone buy tons of improved seeds. He says those farmers can use land if they give a share of their harvest, often 20%, to the landowner or manager. But as improved techniques take hold, some landowners may not be satisfied with a 20% share of what is likely to be a poor harvest. Unless the government introduces policies to help smallholder farmers, they will have less and less land to use in this area. Smallholders risk becoming landless laborers as people with more money outbid them for access to the land. I'm Mario Ritter.
This is VOA. We are coming to you from Washington. Ana Mateo joins us now with some interesting news about a food that many people in America have been enjoying for years. But there is something new.
Americans love peanut butter. The average child will eat 1,500 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before he or she graduates high school, according to the U.S.-based National Peanut Board. But there is a dispute over a new peanut butter. It is called STEEM, or steam peanut butter. This peanut butter adds a new ingredient, caffeine. Caffeine is a stimulant that helps people become more awake or energetic. Coffee is a popular morning drink because it has caffeine and gives people energy in the morning. But medical experts worry about adults who rely too heavily on caffeine. Even small amounts of caffeine can be dangerous to children, says the American Academy of Pediatrics. United States Senator Charles Schumer says he worries about the effects on children from a product never before associated with caffeine. To think that peanut butter, one of the snacks most closely associated with children, might have to be stored in the medicine cabinet as opposed to the kitchen cabinet should serve as a jolt to the FDA, said Schumer, a New York Democrat. Schumer wants the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to investigate. He noted that earlier the FDA blocked plans for a caffeinated chewing gum. Steam, the manufacturer, said it is selling the caffeinated peanut butter all over the world. The manufacturer says 2 tablespoons has 150 milligrams of caffeine. A 12-ounce regular coffee has 250 milligrams. The product provides caffeine in an easily digestible way, the manufacturer says. Caffeinated foods have been sold in U.S. stores for well over a decade and are in no way a new idea, the company said in a statement to VOA. The company says customers tell them they want to eat the caffeinated peanut butter so they don't have to drink as much coffee or energy drinks. The company says it is not marketing the peanut butter for children. But Schumer is not persuaded. Peanut butter has been a favorite of children for generations, he said. Schumer continued, parents across the country shouldn't have to worry about a scenario in which their child might unknowingly bite into a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that contains more caffeine than 2 cups of coffee. The American Academy of Pediatrics says caffeine in small amounts can help the physical performance of adults. But the Academy urges parents not to allow children to take even small amounts of caffeine. It warns of caffeine's possible negative impact on a child's heart and brain development. The biggest sales of peanut butter, by far, are in the United States and Canada. In Europe, the average person ate only about 1 tablespoon per year per person in 2012, according to the Peanut Council. The largest U.S. exports of peanut butter go to Canada, Germany, Mexico, and Nigeria. Peanut butter is a food paste made from roasted peanuts. Canadian Marcellus Gilmore Edson won the first patent for peanut butter in 1884. I'm Anna Mateo.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. It used to be mostly the military that used small, unpowered aircraft called drones. The little planes were very costly, but as they have dropped in price, more people have begun to use them. Rescue workers and farmers are among the new users. A company in France is using drones to help farmers examine their crops and limit the amount of fertilizer they use. The fast rate of development of computer technology, image sensing devices, satellite navigation, and smartphones has led to lower priced drones. Researchers and developers have learned how to build smaller and less costly drones sought by individuals, companies, and governments. Movie makers are using drones to film from the sky. Historians use them when they explore ancient buildings. Rescue workers use them to look for people. And now, farmers are using them to monitor their crops. Romain Farou is a French businessman who starts companies. His father was a farmer. He believed drones could help farmers. He helped create a company that developed a small drone that could be controlled by people on the ground. They called it AgriDrone. It uses a special optical sensor to examine crops.
C'est aujourd'hui une technologie qui correspond un petit peu à celle d'un smartphone avec des ailes. C'est l'industrialisation.
He says the technology used is similar to that used by smartphones, except it has wings. He says the industrialization of electronic parts for smartphones and tablets lets them get the technology, including GPS, at a very low price. A computer program directs the drone to fly over the crops. The sensor on the drone records four different colored bands of sunlight that are reflected off the crops. Jean-Baptiste Brahman is a farmer. He says the drone flies over his crops at different times of the season. He says this provides a lot of information about his crops.
J'y vois un premier intérêt qui est la possibilité.
He says the drone pictures show him the exact amount of fertilizer the crops need. He says it also shows exactly where the fertilizer is needed. Some areas of a field may need more than others. As a result, Mr. Brahman says there is reduced nitrogen from the fertilizer after the harvest. This helps nature. Romain Farou says farmers use information gathered by the AgriDrone to place fertilizer only in areas where it was needed. This saves money and reduces pollution. And that's the VOA Learning English Environment and Science Report. I'm Marcia James.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In March of 1868, Congress tried to remove President Andrew Johnson from office. But the Senate failed in the effort by one vote. Andrew Johnson was a Democrat. Congress was controlled by radical members of the Republican Party. Most of the charges at Johnson's trial were based on his dismissal of the Secretary of War. A new law said the president could not remove a cabinet officer without Senate approval. Johnson said the law was unconstitutional. The trial was an important turning point in the making of the nation. Removal from office would have established the idea that the president could serve only with the approval of Congress. The president would have become, in effect, a prime minister, requiring the support of Congress to remain in office. Andrew Johnson's victory kept alive the idea of an independent presidency. Although Congress failed to remove him, the vote did not end a conflict with the White House over the future of the South. But it did have an effect on efforts to rebuild the South following the war. Radical Republicans wanted to punish the South for starting the war. They also wanted to be sure new governments in the southern states would support the Republican Party. This week in our series, Doug Johnson and Frank Oliver tell about the Reconstruction of the South.
One way radical Republicans gained support was by helping give blacks the right to vote. They knew former slaves would vote for the party which had freed them. Another way Republicans kept control in the South was by preventing whites from voting there. They passed a law saying no Southerner could vote if he had taken part in the rebellion against the Union. This prevented the majority of Southern whites from voting for Democrats and against Republicans.
Congress also made strong rules about what Southern states had to do to re-enter the Union. It said each of the states needed a new constitution that protected the voting rights of all black men. And it said each Southern state must approve an amendment to the United States Constitution that gave citizenship to blacks. The radicals did not rest with changes in the law. They also sent their supporters south to organize blacks for the Republican Party. Many Southern whites hated these men from the North. They had a special name for them, carpetbaggers. The name arose because many of the Northerners who went south arrived with all their possessions in a carpet handbag. Southerners also had a name for their own people who cooperated with the carpetbaggers. They called them scalawags. Neither name was friendly.
Southern whites had a reason to be bitter. They had lost the Civil War. Now much of their power was gone, and they were suffering. But there was another side to the story as well. Southern whites had held black people in slavery for many years. Now the former slaves were getting to enjoy a small taste of freedom. Also, the South had started the Civil War, which had caused so much death and destruction. It was not surprising that the North showed little sympathy when the fighting stopped and the South lay in ruins. Southern states organized conventions to form new governments. Soon, all but three Southern states had new legislatures. Not surprisingly, radical Republicans held firm control in every one of the new governments. Many of the new governors and state officials were carpetbaggers from outside the state. Others were Southern scalawags.
Many of these new state officials were dishonest. They began using their power to become rich. In South Carolina, for example, the new governor was a former army officer from the state of Ohio. He gave government jobs to many dishonest men, including some who were wanted for crimes in other states. The same situation existed in other state governments in the South. In Louisiana, for example, the governor was a carpetbagger from the state of Illinois. He left office after 4 years with $1 million. His official pay during that time was only $32,000.
The South was not the only place where public officials were dishonest. The period after the Civil War in the United States was marked by several famous incidents involving violations of the public trust. Some of these incidents took place in the North, even in the White House. They were among the worst examples of dishonesty and poor government ever to take place in American history. It also is important to note that not everyone in the South was dishonest. The new state governments did many good things. They built roads and bridges, schools and hospitals. They improved transportation and education. They loaned money to companies to build railroads. Most important, they helped give hope to former slaves. These people were struggling to create a new life in the land of their former owners.
So the record of Reconstruction in the South was mixed. Many Southerners believe, even today, that Reconstruction was a bitter time of defeat. But others now say this period after the Civil War was a necessary step in creating a different kind of South from the one which had existed before. Historians do agree that Reconstruction changed the United States in several important ways. One of the most important changes was in the Constitution. Congress passed 3 historic amendments to the Constitution during this period.
The first was the 13th Amendment. It ended slavery in the United States. The next was the 14th Amendment. It said, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States were citizens of the United States and of the state in which they lived." It said no state could limit the rights of these citizens. Finally, there was the 15th Amendment. It said, "A citizen of the United States could not be prevented from voting because of his color." The 13th Amendment freed all Negro slaves. The 14th and 15th Amendments were supposed to protect their rights. These laws alone, however, did not succeed in doing this. It would take another century until Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders to make these rights a reality. Yet the passage of these 3 amendments to the Constitution was still a historic step in making blacks full and equal citizens.
These same laws and other actions of the radical Republicans changed the South in other, less desirable ways. They helped cause angry whites to form the Ku Klux Klan and other groups that terrorized blacks for years to come. The laws also increased bitterness between the North and South that lasted many years. Reconstruction changed the economy of the South, too. White landowners broke up their big farms into smaller pieces of land. They rented these to black farmers. With the land came seed, tools, and enough supplies for a year. In exchange for this, the owner would get a large share of the crop raised by the tenant farmer. This system, called sharecropping, spread through the South. It lasted for almost 100 years. Sharecropping made it possible for blacks to work the land for themselves for the first time in their lives. But it also made it difficult for them to earn enough money to improve their condition. As a result, the majority of Southern blacks remained in poverty. The system helped cause the South to be the poorest part of the United States for many years.
The Reconstruction period changed the face of the South and the United States. The events of Reconstruction also were central to one of the nation's most interesting presidential elections. That will be our story next week.
The program was written by David Jarmel. The narrators were Doug Johnson and Frank Oliver. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.